We haven't had baseball since June 12th, 2021, and now it's back. I've got Gus and George with me to look back and look ahead. This is Dinger Derby.
Welcome. Welcome to Dinger Derby, the official podcast of RedRaiderDugout.com. The only website completely devoted to Texas Tech baseball. Join Keith Patrick twice a week for team news, guests, ranking updates, and game reports. We'll be hitting taters with the Red Raiders from opening weekend all the way through Omaha. This is Dinger Derby.
Welcome in, my friends, to the Dinger Derby podcast, the official podcast of RedRaiderDugout.com. I'm your host, Keith Patrick. Glad to be here with you in this preview episode of the 2022 season. I'm joined, as I often am, by Dr. Mike Gustafson, President and CEO of the College Baseball Foundation. They run the College Baseball Hall of Fame, and George Watson, who is the former sports editor of the Lubbock Avalanche Journal, longtime fixture in the Lubbock sports scene, big-time fan of Texas Tech Red Raider baseball, and also heavily involved in the College Baseball Foundation and the Hall of Fame as well. Boys, glad to have you with me, and we're just going to dive right in, fellas. It's been far too long of an offseason. Not as short as we wanted it to be, because the Red Raiders did not make it to Omaha last year. First Super Regional they've hosted that did not end up in a trip to Omaha, but still a fantastic season nonetheless. And I think that there was a lot of storylines and talk that came out in local media about what that 2021 season was. Of course, there was a lot of injuries, and now you've had a lot of guys move on, and we can talk a little bit about what they're up to as well. But maybe some just final thoughts. What's your overarching feeling of what last season was for the Red Raiders, and what it, you know, says about this program, Tim Tadlock, whatever it is, as far as the situations from your point of view?
I think it's another successful season. Obviously, in Tim's time here, Coach Tadlock's time here, the bar's been set really high, and which is a great thing, a great problem to have. I think anytime you're hosting in the postseason, it's the mark of a pretty good season. The fact that last year's team was a national seed was impressive. Of course, they were right on that bubble with Stanford. Stanford ended up, you know, coming here and handling the deal. But when you know, and getting to Omaha and being really, really playing fantastic here and being a hot team at the right time and all that. But I think when you think about just good programs over the course of time, they're always in the thick of it. They're always in the postseason. They're always able to take shots and have a chance, and that's right where the Red Raiders were last year. You know, and it's never really a bad thing to have a regional, host a regional with Army, North Carolina, UCLA here, brands like that, and then Stanford even the next weekend. And to handle those with great crowds and great weather and just a great scene, I mean, it's just a good thing for baseball fans around here, and something we don't ever want to take for granted. And certainly – everybody has the aspiration to get in Omaha and getting the big trophy, but boy, that was a good team. And as you said, when you really think back and dig back into that season, you think about the injuries I saw a highlight of something of either, may have been from the regional, and Kurt Wilson was playing center field, and I thought, well, that was weird, you know. But Dylan Carter had battled injuries. And, you know, and I think he struggled with that shoulder all year. Noisy obviously was out from, you know, April on. And he just, you know, you go back and actually put eyes on that team in the postseason and think about who wasn't there that could have been. Birdsell, very notably. Brustowski, very notably absent. Dobbins, you know, we can run through a pretty good list. And, it kind of hurts, but I think that's also part of having a good program over a long period of time, is just there's going to be years where things line up better than others.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, we said, you know, in 2014 after the first trip to Omaha, you know, that as fans we would never be disappointed with a season that ends in a super regional. But it's hard not to be disappointed with a season that ends in a super regional at home, because that is, like Gus says, it's where the expectation has come in that you know, if we're hosting a super regional in Lubbock, Texas, you can pretty much book a trip to Omaha because it never happened that way. So yeah, that one will sting for a while, not only with, I think, fans, but I think with these players that are coming back too, that one's going to sting because they were right there. They had, you know, had a great team to be able to do that. Despite what Gus said, despite all the injuries that he mentioned, you know, Noisy and Birdsall and you lost Becker at the beginning of the season and Dobbins, and it was just on and on, may have been one of Tim's better coaching jobs just to be able to put that team together and be able to compete at that level throughout the postseason. So, yeah, it's, you know, like I said, disappointing ending, but not a disappointing season. And I think maybe it might be a good motivating factor for a lot of these guys coming back, coming into this season, because you've got a lot of guys that have been through this war a couple, 3 years. A lot of them been through this war 4 or 5 years. And so they don't want to go out, you know, with another 2021. They want to have a 2022 that ends in Omaha. And so that may be a motivating factor going forward this year.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's kind of what I was getting at too, George. There was a lot of talk about it being Tim Tadlock's best coaching job since he's been at Texas Tech. And I think that both of what you're saying kind of plays together. You talk about becoming a program that lives at a high level year after year now and has under Tim Tadlock. And so there's the expectations, but you also, in that high level, have the opportunity to overcome what is really, and Gus, you did a good job kind of lining them out, just a slew of injuries. And you remembered them happening, and there was also Drew Baker missed some time early in the season. And then, as a reminder, Cal Conley, who was Mr. Reliable for you all year, was throwing up on the field in the Super Regional. He was so sick, you know. So it just was one of those years that you dealt with it. Not that that's an excuse, but I think the fact that you accomplished what you did, considering all of that, speaks to how good this program is at this point.
Totally agree. Wouldn't change a thing. I'm glad you brought up Kyle, because I was actually thinking about that this past weekend, about, you know, how graphic it is. Nobody wants to watch anybody throw up. But, I mean, we looked out there at him standing behind the pitcher's mound or out there at shortstop and turning around and doing that. And, you know, and it was a pretty – and we knew that he'd been under the weather and like, well, there it is right there. And we've all been that kind of sick in a way that, you know, the illness and just being puny is no time being a super regional. And remember, it was ghastly hot. Super regional. It was much hotter than it was for the regional. It was 2018 regional hot, and you can imagine how tough that was. I mean, he can't keep anything down. He was probably dehydrated and weak and everything else.
Correct me if I'm wrong, though, Gus. In, you know, Cal was sick during the super regional, but that's something that kind of run through the team the last, you know, that week leading into it. So there was a lot of the guys that were still, I think, maybe kind of feeling the effects of that going into the super regional.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. And then they had a guy, you know, and Stanford had their number two pitcher. You know, that was a real key, because the whole idea was, if their number one comes in here and controls this, you know, that first game, that you can string out second game, get the W, and then they really were going to get pitching thin. And they just took it to us offensively both days, but especially the second day. And then their number two starter had a career day. I mean, we all three of us talked to parents and different people that were like, that was the best game of his life. And I'm sure it was. Just like we talk about Cam Smith throwing a 3-hit shutout to finish off a regional in Coral Gables, that kid and that program will be able to say that same thing about what got them to Omaha in 2021.
So let's wrap a bow on that last year's team, and then we'll look ahead a little bit here. But you had 10 guys go on to professional baseball. The next closest in the Big 12 was UT. They had 7. TCU had 6. Out of the College World Series teams, NC State had 8. And then Arizona, Tennessee, Vanderbilt had 7. So when you look at the level of talent, and some of it was injured talent that did go on and get drafted or sign deals, you were right there in the mix with some of the best in the country. And I'll just run down the list. Cal Conley, 4th-round pick to the Braves. Drew Baker, a 4th-round pick to the Rays. Braxton Fulford, who really increased his stock, not only over watching him 4 years, but certainly in the last 2 seasons, a 6th-round pick to the Rockies. Mason Montgomery, 6th-round pick to the Rays. Ryan Sublette, another guy that really increased his stock over the last season, 7th-round pick to the Dodgers. Hunter Dobbins, who was injured, probably was your Friday night starter to start the season last year, didn't quite make it to get to play at all. Eighth round pick to the Red Sox. Patrick Monteverdi obviously figured in big as a transfer. Eighth round pick to the Marlins. And Dylan Noisy, he went in the 17th round of the Twins. Noisy, of course, went out with the back injury. And then Jacob Bristowski, who didn't get to play the season at all, had Tommy John as well. He signed as a free agent with the Brewers. So 10 guys go on to professional baseball, and that's really going to be a big part of our conversation tonight is who are we going to be seeing? And Gus, I think a question's been asked of you, and we'll ask it again here in just a minute. But coming into the season, I think it's been a little bit different for fans to see what this looks like because you're used to seeing Texas Tech ranked in the top 10, all kinds of high expectations, and we saw them across the board. We saw them up in the top five from one publication and down, I think, in the 20s in another. And I think that the national media is showing with that that, hey, we don't know exactly what to make of this team because we only know two or three guys that are coming back and there's a lot of new faces and maybe more than we're used to, I think. So I think reload is still there from what we've seen, but that's kind of setting the stage for what we're walking into here. There's just quite a few unknowns.
Yep. No argument there. And I think you always, you know, when you go through that poll process, you look at who finished where. And certainly when you look at Texas as not only preseason Big 12 number one pick choice to be number one, but also the national, you know, the national number one and early replay it and you go, all right, they one of the last four teams standing last year. More importantly, they got a ton back other than their Friday starter. They got closer back. They got weekend starters back. They got a ton of position players, a lot of experience, a lot of guys that were really good last year. And that's, you know, and then when you contrast that with where the Red Raiders are, they're looking at, you know, really one guy that pitched. I mean, well, between the two of them, between Chase Hampton and Burtsa, you've got one weekend starter there and those two because Hampton more or less picked up where Burtsa left off, you know, that two or three key arms out of that rotation and key bullpen guys are gone. And then you look at the positions like, man, there's, you know, there's no Fulford for the first time in a long time. And there's, you know, a guy like Conley moving on. Just, you know, there's just a lot of new pieces. And so anytime you're involved in that polling process, you're looking for familiarity at the very, very, very top. And certainly Texas has that and we don't, but I sure think that, you know, this thing's really teed up for the way you started this podcast, which was, you know, guys with something to prove, like Kurt Wilson, who's going to get a chance to play every day at shortstop. It certainly appears and Stillwell to again be a middle of the lineup bat and Easton Morrell to play in the corners on the infield and outfield and be in the lineup a lot. And, you know, we go through a list of key returners there and then add some talented new guys. And I think by reputation, they're picked in that top 20 for sure. And just because of based on what Tim's done around here, like, man, they keep finding a way. So I don't know who these new guys are, but we're going to put them in there somewhere. And I think coming into the season, I sort of thought they would fall around the 10 to 12 somewhere in there. And that seems to be sort of an average from where most of the polls have them. And that's not a bad place to be.
Yeah, no doubt. And I'm going to bring George in here real quick too and talk a little bit because we do have some poll news to share. At least you guys do from the College Baseball Foundation and the Hall of Fame side of things. George, tell us about what you guys got cooked up.
Yeah, we have developed the inaugural College Baseball Hall of Fame Power Poll. We got a preseason poll that we came out with last week. Just something that we're trying to do to kind of, you know, continue to promote the game and enhance the game from the college level. And we've got experts on this poll that are very knowledgeable in college baseball, both from a watching standpoint and from a playing standpoint. We've got some College Baseball Hall of Famers on here who are outstanding college baseball guys, have been for a very, very long time. And we've got guys on here that have just been around the game and know the game. So we decided, you know what, you know, if six polls are good, seven polls are better, you know, or eight polls are better, whatever, however many there are out there. So, and our poll kind of has Tech right there in the middle in the 10 to 12 range. So, but no, we're excited about this poll. We'll be doing it all throughout the season. We'll be voting on it every week and we'll come out with it every week. So yeah, excited about that, and looking forward to doing that and kind of getting that, helping us enhance what the College Baseball Foundation, the College Baseball Hall of Fame, is all about. And I look at the other polls, you mentioned them. It almost seems like, you know, like this year's polls, they're kind of like Olympic figure skating. You can eliminate the highest one and the lowest one and average the rest of them. They're right about there. So that's, you can eliminate the four, you can eliminate the 23, and then everybody else is right there in the middle. So,
yeah, and I saw there was a little bit of outcry on Twitter, I think, because that collegiate baseball newspaper had Tech number 4, and I think that's a lot of respect for the program. And, you know, then all of a sudden you pop into a 23, and y'all have to remind me who that was, maybe Baseball America. And I think that, again, it's just a lack of understanding about where things are, and that's hard for anybody to have. And we've sat between us in every scrimmage pretty much, and we are still going to be guessing one way or the other, and we always are, but there's just less knowns all the way through. So let's start there. And Gus, you've mentioned this, that you'd been asked that on local radio. I mean, outside of Jace Young, what's the other known on this team? And I think you mentioned it already.
Yeah. I'll make it quick because it's repeating what I said, but first of all, I thought, you know, it's a really good question. And I think the question might've been framed, and I don't remember if it is the entire roster or just the lineup for the off, you know, the starting nine. I don't remember thinking of it in the context of a pitching staff, although it may very well apply, but my answer was Kurt Wilson at shortstop. And I think a lot of that had to do with just, he was in the lineup a bunch last year around the month to 6 weeks or so that he was injured. But what we've seen from day one of fall ball and all the way through the January and February scrimmages is him at shortstop and him being very good there. And so, I think that Kurt Wilson is going to be right there, probably in the thick of this lineup and probably playing every day at shortstop. I mean, that would be my bet as the next best bet. And that's probably not a bad thing when the next best bet to Jace Young is another guy in the middle of the field.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, that's a guy that he's been around. He's one of those fifth year guys that George mentioned. And I think that fans probably know this, but Kurt Wilson's played every position on the field for the Red Raiders except catcher. Now, we had a spirited conversation about whether or not he should get put in at catcher at some point, just to go ahead and complete that. But it's quite the story. I mean, it's a guy that comes out of Arlington Martin as a right-handed pitcher, and he was on a really good team there and, you know, has the physical attributes, and then comes in and, you know, kind of leaves pitching behind, and all of a sudden he's playing all over the field. And now here you are, most likely, from what we've seen, an opening day shortstop for you as a fifth-year senior. I mean, it's pretty cool to see.
No doubt. It's and when you think about him playing all these positions, it's not a tricked up deal. I mean, he's played all of these positions at, you know, at points that mattered along the way. They weren't just throwing him out there at some point. He was, you know, he's put on first base and mid. Like I mentioned, he was in the center field for the regional, was about to play shortstop, played a ton in third and left last year. I mean, just really a versatile guy, and probably spent more time his first 2 years on the mound. You know, but he can pitch north of 95 when he's on the mound. But you know, his bat has really, and it started with a question at Rudy's a couple years ago, but you know, where he filled out the question card and said, "When are you gonna let Kurt Wilson hit?" And they stuck him out there in a Tuesday game, and he hit a home run and then put him back out there, and he went 3 for 5. I was like, all right, we got to, you know, true Tim Tadlock style, we got to find a place for this guy to stand. And they really have, you know, since then he's been way more position guy than pitcher, and they've completely stopped with the pitching the last couple of years, you know, no fall ball work and that kind of thing, or at least as far as I know. So, you know, it's an impressive level of versatility. And if it finishes well, like it feels like it's going to, it's going to be quite a story.
You know, it's funny, Keith, I was actually watching some old highlights from 2019 from when Michigan came to Lubbock that weekend, you know, being that Michigan is the season opener on Friday for the Red Raiders. And I was looking through those highlights, how many guys are still on the team that played in that series. You got a guy like Cody Masters that's still here. And Kurt Wilson was actually pitched in relief in one of those games. So that just kind of tells you his versatility and how long he's been doing it here. So, agree with Gus, you know, that's right now. And that's because from our perspective, we've seen them more than anybody else other people might not know, that Kurt Wilson is going to start at shortstop. Maybe not remember that he started the season opener at shortstop last year, and Cal was at third for like one game, and then they moved Cal back to short, and the rest was history for that year. But Kurt Wilson at shortstop, and he's been good from what we've seen out there. He's been good, and the bat has been there. So I think that's a question that's answered on a team that desperately needs to answer some questions in a hurry this season.
To me, what I'd love to see for Kurt Wilson, when you just talk about the narrative, let's get past the question at Rudy's to hero of the 2019 Super Regional, and let's see Kurt Wilson 2022, write the next chapter. Yeah. And I think that that's the opportunity he's being given right now. Go write the next chapter of and I'm not saying that he's that kind of guy that's thinking about that stuff, but we do, as we're trying to out here telling stories, and he has the chance to go write the next chapter in what has been a pretty cool story and a cool career. And then of course, I'm sure he has aspirations of the next level, and here's your opportunity to go earn it, kid. So I think that's pretty cool. So Jace Young, preseason everything, Big 12 Player of the Year. He's on the Golden Spikes list. He's on the Bragan list. I mean, to the point where he's hoofing it to first and Tadlock pinch runs for him. He's like, we don't need the Big 12 Player of the Year getting hurt on the last Sunday of practice, So I think that we know that he's a known commodity. He's definitely projected in the top 10 of the draft, and you want to protect him, and you want to see what he can do. And it seems like it's all still there for him, and he's grounded. But then what's next? Let's move around the infield a little bit. I mean, let's talk about what we've seen in those corner infield spots and who we might end up seeing there. And some of them are probably going to be some new names.
It's really hard to answer that question without going, all right, who's catching? And the two guys that caught the most really throughout the year, fall and into spring, are Cole Stillwell, the senior, and Hudson White, a talented freshman, good looking athlete behind the plate, good looking athlete, period. When you Google him, you get picture, you get video of him playing quarterback in high school. So not a dumpy catcher by any stretch of the imagination. But I'm sure Hudson's not going to carry a heavy, heavy, heavy load early in the season, just to keep from burying a freshman. Being a freshman's hard enough when that season starts stretching into games, 40 and 50, and it's something you've never done before, especially at a demanding position like catcher. So I think those two will spell each other a bunch. But I think that when Stillwell's not behind the plate, he could be involved over at first base, which is obviously where we saw him a ton last year. And if that's the case, then who moves where? Will Morrell play first some when Stillwell's behind the plate? We really start running through some possibilities. Morrell has worked a bunch at third the last few weeks and has looked good over there. Obviously, Parker Kelly's still around as a super senior, and Parker appears to be that guy that's going to move around and be versatile defensively, which we've seen him do throughout his career. But to me, it all starts with where's Stillwell, because Stillwell could just simply go from catcher to DH, and that may very well be the case too. But what does that do with Cody Masters? So I'm just, it's a hard thing to figure. I think we've got certain names that we can go, all right, that guy's going to be in the lineup somewhere, but it's hard to place that. Morrell is run around in the corner outfields as well. Ty Coleman's obviously a transfer, a third, now fourth year player. I think he's got 2 years of eligibility left, but a transfer from Texas A&M, a product of Midland. I'm going to say he's a product of Lubbock just because of his dad and uncle and grandfather. His dad was a year behind me at Monterey and actually was at Tech for a red shirt year. He had some knee problems and then transferred to Lubbock Christian and played, finished his career there, and coached at A&M, was the head coach at Lubbock High for a year, then was the head coach at Midland College for quite a while. His uncle, Steve, was the state player of the year, led Monterey to the state championship in 1981, and now he's bounced around, coached a friendship, Odessa Permian and whatnot, but he's now been the head coach for probably 20 years down at Hardin-Simmons. And his late grandfather Ray was a Lubbock police officer for years and years, and so it's a kid certainly with deep Lubbock roots, and so that's a neat thing for me to see personally. But Ty only hit in the fall, didn't throw. We were told that he was getting over doing some rehab on his throwing arm this January and February in these early scrimmages. The arm has looked better, and he's been in a position to play defensively at third and has looked good. And, you know, the offense should be there from him. He can hit. And so, you know, two interesting pieces to add to Parker Kelly at third base. And you know, it's hard to know if that's going to be a competition or is it just going to be a product of are we facing a right-hander, left-hander, you know, who's moving where and doing what. But I think there's some capable guys there at third base. And Morrell factors in probably at first base as well. We've even seen Coleman play a little bit over there. You know, it's a hard thing for me to really say, here's the first baseman, here's the third baseman,
right?
Because I need to know where Stillwell is going to be.
Well, and really the reason I asked the question because I knew that as the three of us talk about this, we're going to talk about basically everybody because, yeah, and you mentioned Morrell, you know, you got a lefty bat, and so maybe he factors in a different way or they want him in the lineup depending on the pitching. And then you got a guy in Brian Brome that we've seen over there quite a bit, a 5'11", 225-pound freshman out of Katy. And I didn't even mention you talked quite a bit about Ty Coleman, and he did transfer from A&M, Midland League guy. He's 5'8", 190, officially a junior. It's his fourth year, first at Tech. Ryan Brome, he's lefty-righty, Katy High School first year. He's a freshman, a bigger kid, but he's really shown, I think, shown some nice things offensively and shown, as far as a freshman can go, has shown a pretty good feel at first base as well. So, yeah, it's just complicated. There's just a big mess of dudes that are all kind of feeling their way around and seeing where they're going to fit.
Yeah, and a DH is going to come out of there somewhere. And of course, we haven't even got to the outfielders, but
you mentioned, I'm sorry, Gus, I know you mentioned it was Hudson White. Hudson,
there you go.
He's a 5'11", 195-pound freshman, came out of Byron Nelson. And yeah, he's been very impressive in everything we've seen him do. And I think that for me, and I've said this to some folks, local radio, things like that, to me, Hudson White's a guy that doesn't compare to Braxton Fulford freshman. I think he probably compares a little bit better to Braxton Fulford as a sophomore, you know. And so coming in, a little physically bigger, a little bit more maybe comfortable behind the plate, the arm is there, the bat is a little ahead. And so, you know, a guy that you've seen all this time in Brax, you know, this is a guy that that's coming in and maybe not lake ready, as Coach Tadlock likes to say, and as you said, maybe not your everyday guy behind the plate, but a guy that's going to figure in for sure.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's catching a bunch down the stretch in a way that Braxton did as a freshman. You know, that by the time we got to postseason near the end of around final exams, that he started catching a bunch and caught, I think, every inning of the postseason. Wouldn't be surprised if that sort of thing lays out for him. He feels like, to me, one of those guys that's a really good athlete that is full of upside and just is going to get better. Now, he's going to deal with the challenges of being a freshman, and that all freshmen do, especially at a position like that. But I think he's a talented, good athlete, and, you know, just has a chance to be a good player around here for a while.
George, I want to loop you in too and just let you kind of expand and tell us about a guy that we're not going to see behind the plate, because Kevin Bazell transferred from Dallas Baptist. He was a Dallas Baptist commit. He's a freshman, 6'1", 205, out of Rockwall, and he will not be available this year, but we've seen him quite a bit. He is with the team. He is able to practice, all that kind of stuff. So tell us what you've thought of him as he's gone through.
Yeah, it's an interesting deal that, you know, he was at Dallas Baptist and was battling in the fall with former Red Raider Nate Rombach for the job there, you know, with the Patriots. And by all accounts that we've heard, everybody there in Dallas Baptist really liked Nate. Well, I mean, we like Nate too here, but, you know, they like Nate, and I think he kind of got the nod. So I think Kevin kind of saw the writing on the wall a little bit that playing time might be at a minimum at Dallas Baptist, and he ends up here. Now, he's, like you said, he's not eligible to compete this year. He's got to sit out because he's a mid-semester transfer. So, like Cal Conley was a few years ago during the 2019 season, he was here. He was able to be around the guys. He just wasn't eligible to play. So, yeah, we've seen a good bit of Kevin. Strong kid. Has got great power to the gaps. Good discipline. Receives the ball well behind the plate. Would not surprise me if, you know, depending what happens with Hudson White this year, if he's not the leader behind the plate going into next season for the 2023 season. But like you said, he's not eligible this year. So he'll get to sit and learn and kind of get a feel for what this team is about. And he'll be part of a really good 2023 class coming in.
Well, and I'll mention what you guys talked about and the comparison, and you mentioned Cal Conley. It's a guy that you sit there and watch and you're like, dang, we got to wait a year for this guy. And I think it was the same feeling with Conley because, I mean, he obviously had skills. They didn't just show up when he started playing in games, and this kid's the same way. I mean, he really brings a lot out there. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, we saw him stealing a little bit and doing quite a bit on the base pass too.
Yeah. I mean, he looks like he's got a pretty well-rounded game offensively and defensively. Like I said, it looks like he receives the ball real well. Now, obviously, he's a freshman just like everybody else, so he's going to have freshman growing pains. But it doesn't look like that at least in scrimmages that we've seen and things like that, that game speed to this point, whatever getting game speed you can simulate, doesn't get to him. It seems like it doesn't affect him that much. So I'll be interested to see, how he comes through this year and gets ready for next year.
Did we leave anybody out of the infield? Not that there's not plenty more of them to talk about. You haven't talked about your boy, Loudon, Gus.
Yeah. Yeah. Loudon Brooks and Eric Martinez are probably two guys, you know, beyond Parker Kelly that can, be backups at a number of spots. And Loudon is came here with Kyle Conley's little brother who is, actually another piece behind the plate and, may very well catch some and as a third catcher. And, but both of those two kids out of the Cincinnati area up there, Northern Kentucky and, Southern Ohio and Loudon is he really, I mean, if you saw the Tech scrimmage against the Texas Rangers fall instructional team, you saw Loudon get inserted into the game about halfway through. And of course they all, everybody sort of subbed in and played a chunk. Cause that was a 12 inning scrimmage, if I remember correctly, but Loudon had three really good defensive plays. Now he may be a tick behind. He's certainly behind where Kurt Wilson is right now, but a good athlete. And Cal Conley has told me that, Loudon was a really good high school basketball player too. And, again, just another one of those things that gives you an indication of what they are athletically. And, defensively, he can play. He's ready to go right now. The offense is probably a little bit behind. But, where it'll be eventually as he just grows and gets stronger. But, man, he he's been running around the last couple of weeks in center field, and he's a good athlete out there. And for a guy that I would have guessed has probably spent – a chunk of his lifetime in the infield because he's that good. I thought he got pretty good reads this weekend and, did some routine things and had a chance to run down some balls and really do some fantastic things that, I don't know how much time he's going to spend out there, but it's probably a mistake to say he's just a shortstop or he's just an infielder because he's a pretty good athlete. I suspect that this time next year, we'll be counting on him in some way, that he may very well have that shortstop spot as a, as his to take. We shall see. But if the development's there, he's a good athlete.
So let's talk about and move to the outfield a little bit here. And really, I think that the casual fan probably heard about three guys coming into this program, and it's really because of where they came from. Ty Coleman is one coming in from Texas A&M. Dalton Porter is another coming in from the University of Texas. He's a lefty-lefty, 5'11", 195. He's a sophomore, originally out of Leander. And then the other is Cooper Swanson. He came in from Florida State, fifth-year guy, 6'2", 205, originally a Florida guy, so left the home state to come out to Texas Tech, and you kind of got the one-year opportunity here to really blow it up. And so we talked about Coleman. Let's talk about Porter and Cooper Swanson, what we've seen out of them.
Whew, mercy. These last couple weekends, they were certainly this last weekend, they were, boy, both those guys, Cooper had a homer, triple, and a double in one of the, I think it was last Friday scrimmage, and in his last at bat, he hooks one over the third baseman's head, headed to the corner, and the left fielder cuts it off, and he – kind of hustle doubles it into second, and all the dugout guys were laughing and yelling at him like, man, you got to stop at first. You said for the cycle, you know, so that was the day he had. We've seen him hit some long, long home runs. There's big power there. And you can go back to his numbers at Florida State, in fairness. And you see a bunch of strikeouts too, but you know, what I think everybody's hoping for is that this guy gets the chance to just relax, change the scenery, get himself off to a good start as a veteran player, and, really do some good things, because he looks good getting off the bus. He had a drag bunt single against the Texas Rangers to lead off that game. We've also seen him hit home runs a long way. He's played mostly as a corner outfielder, but he's also played some center field. And, what do we have in him? Is he a career 190 hitter and that's what he's going to do here? Then we don't have a game changer. Does he have game changer pop, double digit home runs, all that stuff? Absolutely. And so who is the real Swanson? We will soon find out. And that's another reason why pollsters are going, are they the 18th best team or the 7th best team, because of guys like him. But and Dalton Porter didn't play a ton last year at Texas, like a lot of freshmen, kind of sat and waited his turn. He's been here playing in some corner outfield, but has also run around in center field, looked pretty good. This past weekend, he had an inner squad where I may have lost track, but I guess it's a good problem that I lost track between 4 or 5 stolen bases on Friday, including a steal of home, a true steal of home, a couple base hits just on base. Seems to really, he's not a big electric power guy, but I think he can really hit and play and, contact guy, can bunt and just do some things, run. So he's an interesting guy and probably factors in left field. And those two are pretty notable transfers that, if they're really good players around here, this team's got a chance to be, electric offensively. And I know they can't recreate what they did this past weekend, but, if they end up being steady contributors, man, it really adds some speed and power elements that they're going to make this a really dynamic offense.
What you got, George?
Well, the thing with Cooper Swanson, and Gus hit it on the head, Is he going to be the career 195 hitter that he's been at Florida State, or is he going to be something different because of the change of scenery? And I think in a lot of ways you can lump about four different guys at that have been here for a while in that same conversation. I think you can lump Kurt Wilson, Easton Morrell, Parker Kelly, and Cody Masters, because those guys have to this point have just been kind of either role players, or they've kind of been bottom of the order type guys. They haven't really been middle of the order, double digit home run, over 300 hit and driving the offense kind of guys that you're going to need, somebody to protect Jace, or else guys are just going to pitch around him. So that's one of the big questions that I think that has to be answered, is because from what we've seen, you're going to count on Morrell. You're going to count on Wilson. You're going to count on Cooper Swanson, which I wouldn't have thought of, prior to this past weekend. I either Swanson or Porter, I didn't think they had shown enough to me to, pop into the starting lineup. But after this last weekend, right now I would start both of them out there. I would find a place for them to stand, just like Tim likes to say. But I think it goes back to a bigger question in that, I think what last year showed, last year's offense, if you look at the numbers, compared to the rest of the Big 12, this is a very middle to bottom of the order offense, even with Jace's production, even with Cal's production, even with the little bit of a breakout that Stillwell had. It was still a team that only finished about 6th, maybe 7th in the conference last year. So I'm kind of wondering, going into this year, with all the unknowns that Tim has with this team, is he going to change his philosophy a little bit and maybe sacrifice some defense to get some offense out there? Because, we all love Parker Kelly. He's a great kid out there, great defender, but a 195 average is kind of a hole in the offense that you really can't afford in this league. So there, and even a 250 or a 260, you got to get up close around 280, 290 to be an effective hitter in this league. So will Tim stick some new guys out there that have shown more pop and maybe a little less defense just to be able to generate some offense, at least early on in the season? I just don't know if he's comfortable with that or if he really wants to stick with, you know, the same guys that he knows he can count on, at least defensively, and still play the pitching and defense game. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of offense, what kind of lineup he rolls out there on Friday. Is he going to go more offensive? Is he going to look for some more offense? Or is he going to stick with defense? That's kind of the first question I'm looking at. And then if he is, then you kind of start plugging in guys like Dalton Porter, you know, Cooper Swanson, you know, some guys that have shown some pop in the offense, that in the scrimmages that we've seen.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, you talk about Coach Tadlock's philosophy and thinking about what's he going to be willing to do. And I think one thing that we've seen that he's willing to do over the years is a whole lot of experimentation early. And Matt Gardner talked about it at the first pitch luncheon and, you know, talked about running lots of guys out there and kind of seeing what they've got. And, you know, I think you saw that last year in this tournament that we're about to walk into this weekend in Arlington. Saw a lot of guys run out there, saw them try a lot of different things. And you talked about Kurt Wilson starting at shortstop, and that was a surprise move last year as far as him doing that. And, you know, I think you're going to see a ton of dudes run through this year. And Gus, you posed a question to us Sunday. It's probably worth posing again here.
You know, this time last year, Brooks, my son, was calling double digit home runs for Braxton, and he got that right, obviously. But you know, I've wondered if we had to throw it out there for just a fun little yes no bet, if you put it at 3.5 over under, 3.5 Texas Tech Red Raiders will finish the year with double digit home runs, what are you taking? You know, I think there's five guys with that kind of power. Now, are they all going to be in the lineup enough to get there? Are they going to have the healthy, you know, all those kind of things. Obviously, Jace is one. Swanson being another one. Wilson has that kind of power. Stillwell has that kind of power. And Masters has that kind of power for sure. I'm not ready to throw that label on Hudson White. I bet he is before the end of his career. You know, there's some dudes that can hit the baseball a long way, and if they get off the good starts and just get their sea legs. I mean, think about where we are with Masters. Go back and look at his 2019 stats. You know, and I don't know if that's something that we can really point to as being a result of the shoulder injury that he had 3 or 4 summers ago. You know, but that guy was a 280, 290 hitter. And he hadn't really been that since then, but there have been stretches of electric power. He hit a ball off of TCU that I was up in the TV booth calling that game, and I could see everybody saw it go over the monster. But what I could see from up there that high was that it bounced and short hopped off of that engineering building out beyond center field. That's a long, long mm-hmm. home run, and so Masters has that kind of pop and, you know, big juice. And, you know, are we really going to have 4 or 5 guys with double digit home runs? It's not out of the question. That would be a mark of a bunch of guys having good years, certainly. But you know, if you want to get in on some fun, play the over under game on 3.5 guys being double digit home run guys. I don't know what the bet is, but that's the thought at least.
Well, and I think that an interesting thing with that and with some of the guys you mentioned that have that kind of power, and you said it, you know, where are they playing?
Yeah.
And I think I agree with you with Cody Masters, but Cody Masters is going to have to fully lock down and stranglehold the DH spot to have a chance to do something like that. And I hope he does. I mean, I think that's fantastic, but that's the question, because you got a lot of new dudes here looking to make a mark too. And it's funny, George, when you mention those guys, you know, that list that you kind of rattled off earlier, every one of those guys has a massive, memorable offensive moment and defensive moment, you know, in this fan base's collective memory from their last several years, 3, 4, 5 years. But you're right. I mean, they've been role players, and now the question is, are they going to own a position fully all season long?
Yeah, I mean that's the big question. You know, I got nothing against Cody Masters. He's been a great player here, the whole time he's been here. But Gus mentioned he's a 280, 290 hitter last year, but he's never been able to stick in the lineup, whether it's because of injury or because of lack of production. Easton Morrell has kind of been a middle to bottom of the order kind of guy. Kurt Wilson, I think, is most ready to kind of take that next step up. And I think he'll get that shot, starting at shortstop and from the offense that we've seen. But yeah, you're right. They've all had their moments, but they've never had their season. And so that's what we need. I say we, that's what the fans, that's what Tech, that's what Tim needs from them, is for everybody to kind of finally put it together the way I think that we're all confident they can.
Yeah. I'm running down the list here, boys, and just making sure that we're not forgetting anybody. I definitely want to talk about Zach Vuletich still. Yep. And I think that, and not that we're not going to set the outfield. I mean, I definitely think Dalton Porter has made a case from what we've seen. I think Cooper Swanson has. You don't want to forget Dylan Carter in that mix. Now, the question is if the hammy is fully healthy and all those kinds of things, because those can be nagging. And we'll just see what we see this weekend, I think, with Carter and how much you see him. But Vuletich is a guy that's gotten a lot of time out there. I think he was a little bit more hot offensively in the fall than what we've seen in the spring, but an interesting guy for sure. He's a Navarro College transfer, fourth year, 5'9", 185, originally out of San Antonio Brandeis. But the dude has massive quads, probably the biggest forearms in the Big 12. And I just like him, and I think that I want him to have a great season. We've seen him playing a little bit of right field. He definitely probably has a little bit of growth out there, from a comfort level still to go. But an interesting guy as far as a JUCO transfer that can hop out there. And y'all, whether it's Vuletich or somebody that I've forgotten, let's wrap up these position players.
Yep. I think the Dylan Carter, where Dylan was 2 years ago was different than last year. And of course, fans will remember that he didn't even appear in a game until about, I don't know, maybe halfway into Big 12 play. And he, too, coming off a shoulder injury 2 summers ago. And so while he was certainly healthy and released to play, he just didn't look like himself last year. And, and the offense was a struggle. You could see that in his numbers. And so, obviously a proven commodity defensively in center field. Where he is in terms of his health right now at this moment is the question, because, as you said, he wasn't part of the picture this past weekend in the inner squads, and you never know, they may be being overly cautious in a situation like this this close to the season. But obviously a proven commodity there in the outfield, proven commodity defensively, center field. Vuletich has been more of a corner outfielder. He's played a little bit at third, but it feels like this fall he has slid back into mostly left field, and he's going to be the ultimate and if he's hitting, they're going to find a place for him to stand or DH or something like that. But, an interesting looking player. And, Owen Washburn's another guy that's interesting, a true freshman out of Wisconsin, son of Jared Washburn, former big leaguer, longtime big leaguer. And Owen actually started in right field in that scrimmage against the Rangers and, has had stretches of productivity, just throughout the fall and into the spring. And so I think he's in the conversation as a corner outfielder. Again, we've probably seen him way more in right field. I don't think he's played any center field, probably a little bit in left, but, he's another one that's, if he gets off to a good start and he's hitting, he'll probably be out there all the time. But, it's a long list of candidates out there. I mean, it really is. And we probably haven't thrown Drew Reynolds in there enough yet. He's probably more on the first base and had him some at catcher, DH candidate, a little bit of a skill set and a body type similar to what Ryan Brohm is in terms of left-handed hitter with some pop, freshman. We've seen him probably spend the most time at first base, a little bit in right field, he and Brohm as well. But those two guys are probably in similar spots of – backup roles, and if they get a chance to play and get hot and get it going, who knows what'll happen. But they both have some pop for sure. And Morrell we've seen play all four corner spots, and I'm saying left, right, third, first, and I think a lot of where he's involved and how much what he does may really, obviously he himself needs to be productive, but I think, you know, what's happening around him. If the outfielders are all playing well and they're the hot group, then Morel comes into the infield. You know, Morel's at DH, and you know, he didn't put up huge offensive numbers, but one thing he did really well was just as an on-base guy. The on-base percentage was good, and was in the top 10 in the Big 12 in walks. And so there is a place. Is he a leadoff guy? I don't know. He's probably not the base-stealing candidate, but he may be the on-base guy. And at the very least, he may be a good productive option to have down at the bottom of the order. You know, he himself 2 weekends ago had a home run and two doubles in a scrimmage, and you know, had the sort of pop that he showed last year when he hit the two home runs in the game against Stephen F. Austin. So, and the home run in Omaha in 2019 against Arkansas. Yeah. And so, you know, George said, and it's the challenge every player has: who's going to string together what, take the next step. You know, all of these guys, really, from Morel, you know, up through Stillwell, I think. I've tallied up the most career at bats from all of these guys, and all of them, Morel is close to 300, just short of 300. And I think Stillwell was a little bit over 400 of all the returners on this team in terms of Division I at bats. And so, you know, you look at those guys and go, well, they've all got some hair on their bellies in terms of having played a bunch, and, you know, should have the sort of Division I experience that would allow them to settle in and be comfortable. On the other hand, in the cases of guys where there's been, you know, where they haven't necessarily been highly productive, do you look at them and go, well, they've never really done it on a premium high end stage yet at a high level throughout a season. So can they do it? And you got to like the fact that you got a bunch of seniors that are good athletes and veterans that have been on the biggest stages, because that would sort of set itself up for guys that are ready to string together good things for an entire year.
I feel like I need to cue a Moneyball quote. Why do I like him? Because he gets on base.
Yeah, if they're getting on base, that means they're not making outs. I mean, that's
yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, and that's a big deal, obviously.
George, any final position player thoughts before we switch to pitchers?
Well, I think one of the interesting sub storylines that I'm going to kind of be watching is that, you know, a few years ago, it kind of explained to me, you kind of want to have a freshman junior team. You want to have juniors leading the way. You want to have freshmen that can come in and play and kind of be the next guys that'll carry you for the next 2 or 3 years. And so last year, you really only had one really freshman position player on the roster, and that was Drew Woodcox, and he's gone. He's now at Rice. So you really don't have any of those guys that are sophomores now, but you've got 4 or 5 guys on this year's roster between Loudon Brooks, you know, Brome, Reynolds, guys like that, you know, Hudson White, that I think that I'm going to really kind of keep an eye on to see if any of those guys kind of take off and kind of set the foundation to not only, you know, help this team this year, but kind of establish themselves as maybe the guys of the future. That's kind of one of the things I'm going to look at. If that can happen, I think this team really has a great chance to take off, because that just strings out your lineup. It strings out your roster and gives you incredible depth up and down the lineup.
All right, let's switch to some arms here, boys, as we're closing in on an hour that we've been recording. We talked a little bit before we started the episode, though, so we got some time to play with here. So if anybody's like it, it's a podcast. It can be as long as we want. It'll be as long as people are willing to listen to, I guess.
They can fast forward, too.
Yeah, there you go. Fast forward through the parts where I talk and listen to these two. So if anybody was, you know, the fans paying attention, you kind of see names pop up when transfers happen. We talked about the position players. So as far as the pitchers go, you probably heard about Andrew Morris. He's a right-hander out of Colorado Mesa. Was likened from the right-handed side, likened a lot to Patrick Monteverde as far as the situation that he's coming into at Tech and the experience he has and the level he's been at. Garrett Crowley, a guy originally from Queens that came in from Fordham, is a lefty. And then you also had Colin Clark, a fifth-year senior originally from Ohio, again, that's coming in out of Youngstown State. And so you had those walk in, but I want to start with talking about pitchers. with a story that maybe didn't get enough notice as it should have. Brandon Birdsall was drafted in the 11th round, 339th pick overall by the Twins, and he's back at Texas Tech. And I think he had unfinished business. He had the injury. Birdsall's a 6'2", 240-pound junior. Do you feel like Birdsall is going to be the anchor of this starting rotation once again this year, walking in and healthy?
Well, he sure was before the injury last year. Once he, you know, he scuffled in Arlington last year on this opening weekend, but once he settled in and got going, he was as good as anybody on Friday night, and you know, stretches of dominance and look like the kind of high round pick that wouldn't be here right now, to be quite honest, were he to have stayed healthy. And you know, I think the only reason he's here right now is because of that injury. You know, he sets up to be the anchor of this pitching staff. I don't think there's much mystery about that. Now it's just an opportunity for him to stay healthy throughout and just perform and go get him, because, you know, he threw an inning or two against the Rangers. And I'm really talking about that just because it was a televised scrimmage and sort of a highlight. A lot of times, like the red black series can be, that he threw an inning or two and was just blowing hitters away and looked dominant. You know, and I would assume he'll be a weekend starter and maybe, you know, the Friday night guy this, you know, here later on this week. But boy, what a piece to have at the top of the rotation, and a veteran proven arm like that. And for him, I think the opportunity to establish his health, carry it out through a year, will set him up to be in a really good spot professionally.
George, Brandon Birdsall.
Yeah. I mean,
what you're seeing.
Yeah. So far, I mean, yeah, obviously, you know, you get later in the fall and you're trying to build innings and things happen and hitters are, your own hitters are starting to figure you're out. And so you might get hit a little bit, but you know, I've seen nothing from Brandon Birdsall that makes me think he's going to be anything other than your Friday night ace, at least at this point in the season. You know, now maybe you might switch him around depending on how well Morris does, depending on your pitching philosophy. You know, a lot of coaches will put their ace on Saturday because your Saturday game is your pivotal game. Either you're trying to avoid losing a series or you're trying to win a series at that point. So some coaches will want their best guy on a Saturday, but right now I see nothing that tells me that Brandon Birdsall is not your Friday night guy, and that that Andrew Morris is not your Saturday guy. Andrew Morris, I've been very impressed with. You know, he comes out, you know, he's got a real overhand delivery, but he really attacks the zone with about three or four pitches that are really, really quality pitches, and you know, even has the best hitters on the team, you know, shaking their heads at it sometimes. So if you've got those two, if they can perform to the level that we've seen and that everybody thinks they can perform, then you've got a 1-2 punch that will go out there and win you a lot of series and a lot of games this year.
So talk about Birdsall, talk about Morris, and then a couple of guys I haven't mentioned that are still on this team, and Austin Becker's one of them, 6'5", 215 righty. Another Ohio guy came by way of Vanderbilt. It's his third year at Tech, but fans may have forgotten about him a little bit because we didn't see him after an injury. And so Becker back and pitching again, and then Brandon Beckel, another one, in his second year, originally out of San Antonio, a 6'3", 220 guy that's been around the program a little bit now and maybe looking to take a step forward to think if he can get things put together. But is the next pitcher that we need to talk about a guy that we should be saying that, knock on wood, that he's back?
Well, I think Chase Hampton will be have a prominent role. Hampton's been, you know, he finished last year as a Friday guy, but won the Army game, won a Big 12 start or two right at the very end. You know, pitched in Cape Cod last summer, which is it's a nice thing to have on a resume after the freshman year. And so he, as a result, he didn't pitch a lot in the fall, at least not to hitters in front of us three watching a lot. But he's been out there recently, you know, here in January, and it's a proven arm, proven weekend arm. And, you know, to me, he appears like he's headed for that Sunday role. One of the new guys that I've been impressed by that I think will factor in it. And one thing that's really tough to do And, you know, maybe in a lot of ways, but certainly with the way Coach Gardner and Coach Tadlock will use their pitchers is to really know who's going to have maybe some higher leverage, higher inning totals out of the bullpen versus to be a Tuesday midweek starter. And, you know, Mason Molina's a freshman out of California that's been really good and appears to be one of those guys that's going to carry an innings load, whether that's as a Tuesday starter or to be one of those guys that comes in the fifth, sixth inning, certainly this weekend, because I think most of these teams are going to be using pitchers with a little bit lighter pitch counts. This is often the case early in the season, but I think Becker will carry an innings role. You mentioned Colin Clark as one of the transfers, the Division I transfers. Got an interesting resume because he's pitched, you know, he's been a Friday starter and a weekend guy at Youngstown State, but is here now probably, has a veteran left-hander career-wise, appears to be a strike thrower throughout. Even he's got some high ERAs, but I suspect that in shorter bursts, he's going to be pretty effective and, a guy that carries some innings out of the pen. And, good-looking tall left-hander that throws strikes. And, you know, sometimes when he's sharp, he'll be that guy that goes out there and has a seven-pitch inning that's over in a minute, you know, just boom, boom, boom. But, there's really a bunch of pieces. And the bullpen's another area of a little bit of uncertainty just when we think about this pitching staff. And, again, go back to our original point about how do you pick this team? Are they 4 or 24 in the country? And a lot of it is – You don't see a returning dude that's been nasty. I think the exception or the biggest cause for excitement was perhaps the biggest disappointment last year was Andrew Devine. You know, where he was 2020, dynamic out of the bullpen as a freshman. Last year really struggled. They've appear to have tweaked an arm slot. He's throwing a good changeup now, and I think in the 5 January/February outings that he's appeared in these inter squads, I think he's been scored on once. And so, if he's back to being 2020 Andrew Devine, it really changes the complexion of this pitching staff, and the roles settle in a nice way. And that's a reason for giddiness.
George, are you Andrew Devine giddy?
I got Andrew Devine giddy last year, and I was the curse of the team. So I don't know if I'm going to be giddy. But, to agree with Gus, I mean, he's looked more like the 2020 Andrew Devine that we know and that went out as a freshman and shut Florida State down in the ninth to win that series. So that's obviously a good sign. But I think you've got some other, fairly proven commodities, guys that we've seen go out and do it. They just got to repeat it on a consistent basis. Guys like a Brendan Gurton, has the potential to take a huge leap this year with his size and with his, the way he throws the baseball. You've got a proven, commodity that I don't think this time last year we would have thought would be a proven commodity in a Derek Bridges from a left side. If you've got a Bridges from a left side and Andrew Devine from a right side that you can close a weekend down, that you can close games with on a weekend, you've got two guys there that are really good and give you a chance to shut down and close out, all three games of a series in a weekend. And then you've got a guy that, has a potential, I think, in Josh Sanders, the sidearm guy that's a little bit of a Taylor Floyd guy. Maybe not, as has quite the movement that Taylor Floyd has, but, has looked really good. And then I think you've got, two or three or four, of the new guys that can come in and really establish themselves, in the bullpen. I think a guy that we've all been impressed with, one of the new guys, is a freshman out of Poolville named Trendon Parrish. Guys come in and just really attacks the zone with about 3 or 4 good pitches. So, The pitching, I think, going into the fall, I think was more of a known commodity, than the offense. And I don't think that, there's been anything that has told us different. But I think it might not be as big a gap between pitching and offense as we might have thought. So, you know, I think this team has really the chance to add some really good quality depth, both in the rotation and in the bullpen this year.
I would amplify the Trenton Parrish thing. I'm glad you got to that. He appears to be, he's interesting. It appears that he'll be a lever, an innings guy that carries a key role, weekend role on, out of the pen, but he could also be a Tuesday guy. It just feels like to me that his role as a freshman, at least at this point, is, to have some leverage innings, and because that dude comes in with some heavy sink, and he can use his change, there was some breaking stuff, but that, you know, there was apparently some draft talk for him, and it shows a boy, I think he's got a chance to be a dynamic freshman and to carry a big role, because that stuff is different,
no doubt. And I'll mention one other guy that we've seen a couple times, you guys a little bit more than me, in Garrett Crowley. And I mentioned him earlier, the Fordham transfer, 6'3", 220. He's a lefty. George and I saw him just really salty, attacking the zone, had that kind of nasty attitude. You guys saw him with a little bit of struggle later on. And so we'll see. You know, that's I'm not saying he's a proven commodity, yeah, but a guy that we'll see what he's able to come out and do. And I just think there's just a lot of pieces and a lot of opportunity, and there's a lot of guys that could take some nice steps, and the depth is there, you know. And so when you really dig into the team, while there's question marks, the pieces seem to be around. It's just how they're going to get put together, how they're going to step up, and what the health is going to look like. And I did want to go back to Mason Molina, and it has nothing to do with playing baseball. He's a guy that is made for a big league PA guy to call out of the bullpen. Because, I mean, seriously, out of Trabuco Hills High School, Rancho Santa Margarita, California. I mean, like, that's fantastic. I want to hear that happen.
Well, I love it.
So
now we all know Rick, and we know he'll fumble that a couple of times, though.
Well, I fumbled it, so, I mean, that's fine. I started things off talking about who'd gone pro. I do want to mention the names that are gone and that fans will be looking at, wondering, hey, what happened to him? Why aren't you talking about him? So you mentioned Drew Woodcox. He's at Rice now. Mentioned Nate Rombach. He's at Dallas Baptist now. Levi Wells moved on to Texas State. We saw him pitch a little bit. Jackson Cobb has gone on to Crowder College. We never really got to see him. Max Marshak has gone to Louisiana. Braden Runyon is in Albuquerque now at the University of New Mexico. And then, of course, Micah Dallas moved on to Texas A&M, where I think he felt like he probably had a shot at a rotation spot versus where he was kind of bouncing back and forth in the bullpen at Texas Tech. And so good luck to him.
Well, and some of the A&M message boards kind of, I guess, from the people that go to watch their scrimmage like us, kind of think that he might even be their Friday guy. So, you know, starting out this season, they think he's going to be in the rotation.
Well, he was in the hype video. So we did see that. So guys, I'm trying to think about how to wrap this thing up. And I think that we probably need to look ahead to the weekend. We're recording this on Tuesday night, and we've got the State Farm College Baseball Showdown coming up this weekend. We'll be there watching that. And there's a few interesting storylines, and we're going to meet some guys throughout the season that were former Red Raiders, and one of those being at Rice, and then in Drew Woodcox. But another one you'll see this weekend when you face Arizona, because Tanner Otrimba is still on that team and a guy that had a pretty good season for them last year and played in the postseason a fair amount. And so what are you seeing? And we can bounce around here. What are we seeing? We don't have to go in order or anything, but thinking about these three teams that the Red Raiders will be facing this weekend, what is there to expect? And what's the pedigree?
Sure. Yeah, and there's a lot of uncertainties. Michigan was an NCAA tournament team last year. And all three of these teams have been to Omaha with us or since we have. Us and Auburn were there in 2019, and Michigan, of course, and then Arizona was there last year. Now the narratives have changed for some of these teams. I think Michigan coming off a decent season last year, they lost a couple of their key arms and key performers. They'll all look at us and say the same thing. But Auburn was down a little bit, and they lost, it appears, some really important pieces on that ball club. And so They're going to have some guys that, they're in a little bit of an uncertain role there because they're in that brutal SEC West, and kind of took it on the chin last year and they're picked down again this year. They'll go in there with something to prove. Then Arizona, obviously, in Omaha last year, with a guy that's listed right there with Jace and Jacob Berry as a Team USA and a high pick, one of the top hitters in the country. He, along with his head coach at Arizona last year, moved on to LSU this year. And, so Arizona with the new coach and, really, really took some hits talent-wise. It'll be interesting to see what they have. Now, one thing we know, they've got a really, really good closer. And so you don't want to play from behind against those guys because, depending on lists and ratings and how much you trust that stuff, one of the top four or five closers in the country. And so the Arizona will also have – there's actually three first-rounders, projected first-rounders. If you look at Baseball America's mock draft, three projected first-rounders in this classic this weekend. Obviously, Jace Young at Tech and then – the Oklahoma third baseman and then the Arizona catcher, Daniel Susak. And so the Arizona game this weekend, will feature a really good catcher on the other side and a closer that you hope you don't have to contend with.
What are you seeing, George, for this weekend? Anybody, anything else to add?
Yeah, it's a good solid test for a lot of teams that are either like rebuilding or restacking or, reloading, whatever you want to call it. I was listening to a podcast today with the Auburn head coach, and he's really excited, Butch Thompson, about his squad. He thinks that they'll be able to get back to closer to what they were, at 2019. He also mentioned, the two other Big 12 teams that are going to be there in Kansas State and Oklahoma. Oklahoma lost a lot from last year, so they've got to do some rebuilding. Now, I think you mentioned Kansas State has like 16 transfers that are going to be on their roster. So they're kind of rebuilding a little bit, kind of like Tech is, kind of like Auburn is, kind of like Michigan will be. The thing is, I don't see any team right now in that tournament that has a true, proven, season-long, bona fide number one starter. You've got a lot of guys that were like 7-4 with a 3 ERA or like a Brandon Birdsall or, something like that. But there's nobody really that, is on like the so-called watch list or anything like that. So I think you've got six teams out there that are really kind of, all looking for a lot of answers in one way or the other.
Absolutely. And I don't have a lot to add as far as looking ahead to the weekend. I do want to mention the schedule real quick. Tech's playing Michigan on Friday night, 7:00. Auburn, it's Saturday at 3:00, so you can catch the basketball game against Texas and then turn around and watch some good baseball. And then Arizona on Sunday at 2:30. I do have bad news for those listening. If you're not aware, it's not going to be on any ESPN networks or ESPN Plus. This is on Flow Baseball. So one of those deals you have to go and buy the 1 month subscription. In the past, that's been about $30, something like that, to get the 1 month, and then you can watch the weekend. So you're paying $10 a game, but you do get to watch the Red Raiders in their opening weekend at a big league ballpark. So not a terrible deal, but I'll, let the lamenting begin on Twitter as far as the quality of the call and all that. But you can, of course, catch Gus and Jamie on the radio call there on this weekend as well. And as we wrap it up, fellas, I want to ask you for you to pick your guys a little bit here. And I'm not saying set the whole lineup, but who's a returner that you're looking to take a big step forward quickly, and who's your new guy that you're looking to kind of be the breakout?
New guy, Hudson White, returner. I'm going to skip past Kurt Wilson because I don't think he needs a breakout. I think he just needs to be as good as he was last year and stay healthy. How about in that regard, I put Morrell in there because I think I think Easton, if there's a little breakout there, it solidifies a lot of things. It solidifies a key spot in the lineup and a key role on a corner somewhere, and create some more left right balance. And he's a key returner.
You know who I like? What I like about Morrell, and you don't get to see it, you know, so much in the game, but he's a guy with fire in his belly. He's kind of a salty dude. You know, he's an angry competitor. And I think that I like that about a guy. I like that in a player. We've had plenty of those that you may not know it just watching, but when you kind of are around enough to hear them a little bit, you know how they approach the game. And I like that about him. I think he brings some fire. Who you got, George?
For my returning guy, I'm going to kind of go opposite of Gus. I'm going to go on the pitching side. I'm going to go with Brendan Gurton. I mentioned him earlier. I think he's got the talent and the ability to take a huge step forward and be an innings eater for this team, whether that's on the back end, whether that's on, you know, a spot start on a Tuesday, whether that's middle relief. I think he's got, you know, what it takes to kind of be that guy that can serve in so many roles. He can be a bridge guy. He could be a, you know, front end guy. He could be a back end guy. So I'm going to look for Brendan Gurton as my veteran. And for my newcomer, I'm going to go back and stay on the mound. And I'm going to go with Trenton Parrish. I think he can kind of be the same thing. I think he can fill so many roles for you with the quality stuff that he has. Wouldn't surprise me to see him starting at some point. Wouldn't surprise me to see him on the back end at some point. So I'm, you know, it all starts with pitching, and so I'm going to go with those two guys right there.
Well, I'll split it. I think as far as a comeback guy, I'm going to take a page out of George's book, and George has taken plenty for picking him. I'm going to take Andrew Devine. I mean, we've seen some really good stuff, and I think there was some mechanic stuff last year, and I think he probably got the yips a little bit too, and you saw it, you know, on national TV or at least stream TV, and it was hard to watch, but we've seen some good stuff out of him. I think there's a real chance for him to take a big step forward and be a really important piece out of the pen. And then, well, I was going to take Kurt Wilson and then Gus shame me out of it, but I'll go with my guy Vuletic. I think that maybe you see the role increase as the season goes along, and once he's seen a little bit more pitching, there may be an opportunity for him to pop forward and be a guy, you know. And I'm not likening him physically to other DHs that Tech has had in the past, but you definitely had JUCO transfers that have found their stride later in the season and, you know, mid season and have really owned a spot. And I think he's a guy that could do that. Defensive is the question. I think the DH spot is up for grabs from a lot of dudes, and I think he could be in the mix.
Yeah. I just couldn't lay my curse on Devine 2 years in a row. You know, funny story, you know, when I was still covering the team back in 2001, there was a shortstop Tech had named Hedda Alvarez, and Hedda was having a great season, was playing great defensively. And I did a feature story on him for the paper going into a series, I think, against Kansas State about how well he was playing defensively. And Greg Evans, who was the assistant coach at the time, was mad at me because he said, I just laid a curse on him. And sure enough, he went out Friday and had 3 errors. So, you know, I just couldn't do that to Devine 2 years in a row. I'm sorry.
Very good. Well, fellas, I appreciate it. Y'all have any parting shots you want to lay on the folks? And hopefully what they're doing is listening to this as they drive to Arlington to watch some baseball this weekend. But any thoughts to leave us with?
No, I don't have any. I'm you know, just excited to get going. I'm giddy to get this thing going, and just as we always are at this point. And, you know, the off season always feels long, and, you know, it's you get into the scrimmages, and then we go break for the holidays, and you come back and do some more scrimmaging, and this thing gets this close, and it's just going to be fun to see us tee it up against another team in another uniform. And man, I am just excited to be there. It's great to get to do what I get to do and broadcast these games, most certainly in a big league stadium like this. And you know, what a tremendous opportunity it is to get to participate in this thing 2 years in a row.
Yeah, I'm just excited to get to go to Arlington this year. I didn't get to go last year because of the freeze and the plumbing issues and all that kind of stuff. It just wasn't a good deal. So, you know, I avoided jury duty on Monday, so I'm good to go. Let's go get this thing started.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, fellas. I'm looking forward to it as well. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun for everybody, and always good to get it started. And I think that you've got a team that I've looked at both of you guys as we've sat in scrimmages and walking out to the car saying, man, I feel pretty good. Like, I feel like there's plenty of talent. There's plenty of, you know, the question marks aren't because there's not talent. The question marks are because there's just dudes you haven't seen a whole lot yet. And that's going to be the fun part, seeing this team and this coaching staff figure it out. So thanks for your time, guys. Thanks for your thoughts. Looking forward to the season, and I'm sure we'll have you back on here pretty quick. But that's Dr. Mike Gustafson and George Watson, and this is the Dinger Derby podcast. Thanks so much, y'all. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy opening day. We'll be back with a recap for you early next week. And until then, we'll see you around and wreck them.
Thanks for tuning in to Dinger Derby and sharing our love for Texas Tech Red Raider baseball.
You can connect with Keith on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Red Raider Dugout.
And find more great Tech baseball coverage at RedRaiderDugout.com. Help us out by rating us and leaving a review on iTunes. And remember to tell your friends about the show. Keith will be back soon with another episode of Dinger Derby. And until then, wreck 'em Tech.
Keep your hand on your gun. Don't you trust anyone. There's just one kind of man that you can trust. That's a dead man or a gringo like me. Be the first one to fire. Every man is a liar. There's just one kind of man who tells the truth. That's a dead man or a gringo like me.